Welcome to Fantastic Females, our adventure to finding the mythical island of freedom together. I'm Kalyani.
And I'm Rupali. We are your next door finance experts sharing our experiences in the world of money and energetics.
So today, Kalyani, why don't we talk about how we got started so that our listeners can maybe know our backstory.
Yeah, I think even we don't know a lot of this about each other, right. So it'll be interesting to go into this. And it's going to be a roller coaster ride full of comedy, drama, emotions.
And lots of other characters.
Exactly. Do you want to start with how you were introduced to investing, Rupali?
Yeah, sure. So I think for me, I mean, it came about, I studied maths and stats. I worked in a bank and I didn't invest at all, actually, initially. And I knew that I had to save, so I'd be saving, but I didn't quite have a goal for it. And so my brother was into properties in the sense, you know, personal investments. And so he brought it up and he said, oh, there's this property, would you like to invest? And then he kind of ran with it. And that was my first investment that I invested with my uncle, actually. So it was actually unreal because I didn't plan for it. Yes, I saved and all of that, but I didn't really plan for it or anything. And so once it happened, I was like, oh, like 10 months in or a year in after my first job, I had a property on my name.
Wow, that sounds amazing. You know, I had a similar experience, funnily enough. And I think I would imagine I used to think that my experience was a unique experience. And at the time, I was quite resistant to it as well. So I studied in the UK. I went back to India for a gap year type of thing. And then I came to Dubai and started my work life in Dubai. And it felt like it was new for my husband and me. So we didn't know what options there were in terms of, you know, the simples, beginners. We didn't have access to a simple start for dummies or beginners, if you like. So we were finding things out and we were kind of just stacking up cash at the time for ourselves. And my father-in-law had been investing in Dubai for a long time, actually, since about maybe 2 decades before we'd moved here, even before Dubai was the place that it is now. And it was mainly as a result of him traveling from the UK to India and stopping over in Dubai quite often and being advised by family and friends he would meet here to invest in this property, that property, etc. And he flipped them over and he says that he didn't really make much of it until we actually moved into a flat that him and my husband were investing in. So that was our reason to move to Dubai. And when we finally got settled, once again, he wanted to kind of expand the portfolio and he wanted to look at something. And through him, we got into an investing kind of cycle in property straight away. And like I said, I was a bit resistant about taking on a property investment at that time. We wanted more liquidity as a young couple. A lot of our resources would go towards traveling. But now that we've got a good kind of rental income coming in from a collection of properties, I really value that.
Yeah, I think it becomes so important, you know, to realize that no matter how you get into it, I mean, like for the two of us, it wasn't super intentional or planned or anything like that, but it does help because the rental income you get from it, you can sell the property later, you can replace it with something else. The options kind of really open up. Obviously, it's not the best case. We talk about diversification, for example, and for me to have my cash savings and then to have a property was quite heavy at both ends, basically, of the spectrum of liquidity. And so I think if you have, you know, if you start in a more educated way, you're knowing a little bit more, obviously you'd want to diversify a bit more. But the gist of the story is that there's no wrong time and there's no right time to be investing in any form of investment, and you're always going to gain out of it.
Exactly. And I would like to mention that we both, I think, have fixed deposits in our name. So what my mom used to do, and I've done the same for my son now, any gifts that we used to get, cash gifts that we used to get from family, you know, envelopes, we call them shagun envelopes, she would keep them aside instead of including them in her kind of disposable income. She would keep them aside and keep putting them in a fixed deposit. So like time to time, she would say, oh, your money has grown to this amount, even when I was 16, 17. And the amount would sound so big and so lucrative at that point. You'd feel quite proud for earning like a big amount in lakhs back in the day in India. So I felt like that was a really good practice that she's kept till now. And now the amount is much larger, but I refuse personally. I don't feel comfortable in considering that as something that I would like to dip into. So it's there, but it's a source of reassurance for me. And it's a practice that I've started with my son with a much smaller amount. He's five now, but he's got a bit of a small fixed deposit.
That's very cute. Yeah, that's actually such a good idea because with Indians, it's you see envelopes flying around all the time, don't you? Like for gifts and for this and for that. And before you know it, it's all gone. Like I'd spend it all. So I never had that growing.
Yeah. I think my mom was really saving savvy to the point that it's taken me some time to be okay with my spending patterns or to spend on some luxuries. So that's obviously the other side of the coin. One interesting thing that I'd like to mention here is one of my friends mentioned that she's got twin boys the same age as my son and she's got them both debit cards. So she gives them 20 dirhams every week and they need to put their money into three boxes. One is charity, one is spending and one is savings. And if they're buying a lot of chocolate, for example, and she wants a nice way to say no, she'll say, oh, I don't have money for it. Maybe you can check in your debit cards. And more often than not, she knows like that their debit card doesn't have that extra amount. Or it's a nice way to also encourage charity from such a young age and ownership of money and that awareness of money. And in her twins, she sees completely different personalities. Mm. One is okay to spend on croissants and treat himself on that cheat day, whereas the other one will save it and nurture it. So yeah.
Yeah, interesting. I think it's a good concept because even today we get told, right, that have a little pot for charity, have a little pot for yourself, have a little pot for the future. And so if you're like kind of instill it very practically like this, then that's quite a good way to do it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think the next investment that came naturally or just happened from the time I was born pretty much is gold, right? So I know I have some pieces of jewelry that I'm told were given to me when I was born or, you know, different birthdays, different events, with wedding being the big one that, you know, for the South Asian culture. I mean, I'm brought up in South Africa, but that's still like a big thing, gold. Even with my in-laws, they also have a lot of gold they gift. It's all in the bank locker today, but also that's an investment that store, it's a store of value, right? So I think even that's something that also just happened.
Yeah, very similar to me. So a lot of gold, small gifts growing up, but the wedding was kind of at my wedding. I was quite against buying so much gold personally. I didn't feel comfortable with the huge amounts that were kind of going out on something that I knew I would wear once in 2 years, best case scenario. I also feel quite unsafe wearing it because I know the amount of hard work and money that's gone behind procuring it. But the culture is so strong in South Asian communities about having that security. And I think it comes a lot from women not being financially independent, which meant that they were at the disposal of their husbands being the sole income earners. And if things were to go south, if things didn't work out between the couple, then the jewelry would end up being a safety net that the woman could fall back on to kind of fund herself and her children back in the day. We've moved quite far from where our mothers were. Even in a generation, I feel we've got all the opportunities that I think they would have dreamt of, but the culture still remains of that lack mentality, providing extra security to us women.
Yeah, absolutely. I think anything that gives you that safety, like the feeling of safety is important because that really drives how you make decisions in areas of your life. So, for example, if you have that safety net, then you're a little more comfortable taking some risk on stock market, for example, or wherever it is that you'd like to play in the world of investments. I think this is also linking back to our mindset, right? So your lack versus abundance mindset. So if you feel like you've got your base covered, you feel grounded enough to be able to do things outside.
Yeah, and also this reminds me of one other aspect of mindset that I had to unlock for myself, which was about wanting to be self-made. So I've seen my father And it's probably the same for a lot of our listeners, especially in the South Asian communities. If your parents were kind of the first ones to go to university, etc., they would have had a rags to riches type of story, or they would have seen exponential growth in their lifetimes. And I have been brought up with that, and I strive towards being that self-made person as well. And that kind of put a lot of self-imposed pressure on me in terms of not wanting to invest with family, not wanting to take from the fixed deposit, like I just said earlier in this episode, not wanting to kind of be a burden is what comes to mind naturally. But my father helped me to unlock this in terms of saying that who is self-made, if you think about it? Even if he was self-made, is how we look at it in a very material achievements type of way. He had full support of his family, from his wife who stepped down from her role. My mother stepped down from her job to be able to kind of support the house back in the day the circumstances demanded it. And so he had that support. And does that mean that he was all by himself? No, he had different types of support. Maybe it wasn't monetary support, but who is self-made in that sense? You know, like everyone has the platform that they're given and then they move up from that. What you do with the platform is what makes you self-made. And I think that unlocked some lock in my head, and it really works for me now to think about it.
I think everyone is self-made and no one is self-made at the same time, right? We're all kind of doing our best with what we have.
Yeah.
And we all have a lot of different things and different aspects, whether it's support, whether it's resources, whether it's just broadly speaking anything. And so, yeah, I agree. I think it's just the mindset. It's so powerful.
So up until today, Rupali, I thought your qualifications, your degree, CFA, would have given you everything you need to know about investing in stocks.
Really?
It turns out I was wrong. And I want to bring this up for our listeners to understand that with the finance background that Rupali has and the economics background that I had, we amongst ourselves thought that the other person knew what to do in terms of investing, but we didn't. And I would let Rupali kind of share her experience.
Yeah, sure. So I agree. I think it's important to kind of go in with this because people assume a lot, and there'll be a lot of people that won't be happy, may not be happy by us kind of saying this, but no one really knows enough, and there is no enough. So there's more and there's less. It's all relative. We all learn from each other. Kalyani and I learn from each other each time we sit down and have a chat. So it's all relative. I've got my maths and stats degree. I've got my CFA, my Kaya. I've worked in asset management, banking, all of that. I've traded stocks, bonds. I've done all of that. But when I was sat in front of my four Bloomberg screens being told to trade, then I could not look back to my CFA knowledge or to my maths and stats or to my degree to say, right, where do I begin with this? Because that was not enough for me to know what to do. And so we all start somewhere. We all, whether you've got a degree in it or not, you may or may not know what it takes. I think the point of this is that no one is equipped enough, and yet everyone is equipped enough. You can actually start without having a degree in finance, Kalyani. You do not need another qualification.
Thank you. It's always a good reminder. And I think it's also, I used to feel like an outsider while feeling like an insider. You know, like I always felt like I was at the fence. I knew enough, but I wasn't an insider. Also because my degree was in London and I was in London for another year afterwards. And we happened to be in the banking district. We happened to live there near St. Paul's Cathedral, which meant I was surrounded by bankers in suits walking up and down, looking really busy as if they knew what they did. And I assumed that they knew what they did, but now I know better in the sense that everyone's figuring things out. And finance is such a vast universe that you have to find your space in it, which is what we're here to do as fantastic females, to guide you, to share our information and to share our knowledge and experiences.
Yeah, I also think that finance and investments is not constant. It's all changing all the time. And so even in the corporate space, you know, when you're managing money, even professionally, the people that are managing it and doing it are relearning and kind of relearning how to understand the markets daily differently. It's not the same concept you can apply over a decade, for example. So let's say someone's got a degree they got like 10 years ago. You cannot use it, that information today, or you can't use all of it. It may help, but you still need to make your mind up about what's happening in the markets today. And you need to figure out a framework of what to do with the information. And so that's where Kalyani and I come in, to help you kind of give you a framework, a way to think in terms of what markets are doing and how you can kind of bring it back home.
Yes, absolutely. If I talk a little bit about how I started, I would like to share that trading, investing was not on my radar at all. I had never given it a thought. I didn't think of it as a way to earn money until about the summer of 2020, when I was in a position where I wasn't feeling happy about my finances. I thought I was stuck in a rut. I didn't want to go back to my corporate job and I didn't know what my way out was. And just on the side, I mean, I'm just sharing a personal story about how I think manifestation worked for me. Someone shared the series of Abundance Meditations by Deepak Chopra. And before the end of the 21 days that you need to do it for, I had already come across an event that was happening online to do with trading. The language of the event, the emails were so strong that they really kind of sat with me. They really aligned with me. And it happened to be such an area of interest that I wasn't even aware of. I'm not sure what this principle is called exactly, but basically you expand your field of awareness when you're ready for it. And I felt like those meditations maybe changed some chemicals in me that opened me up to this alignment. And I'm so grateful for what happened. And I started trading in September 2020 through this kind of training course, etc., that I did. Then I was an apprentice with the same company. And they were very much about trading CFDs. So I started trading derivatives before trading stocks, or just putting my spare money into stocks.
Look at you.
I know. Now I realize that I started off with the more complex thing than just, you know, having a mutual fund investment, etc., which most people would start with. And then it took me some time to work backwards to step zero. I thought, I didn't realize I was at step number four. And I had to then understand what step number three, two, and one would have been for a normal person. And since all of that took me so long, now I've got my business Trading Mum, where I take people up from step one to step four, which is a lot easier to do and a lot more engaging as well. So yeah, that was kind of like my initial journey.
That's such an interesting story, actually. I think I completely agree with you regarding awareness. And once you're kind of aware, you know, it's like these little seeds that are being planted and kind of that opens you up to so much. And this is why Fantastic Females is about money and energetics, because without the energetics, your awareness, and you're not opening, you may not be ready to open that part up in terms of abundance, in terms of allowing things to happen, in terms of kind of just flowing with it at times. And that's something you need to, you know, especially when you're investing, you want to kind of be able to flow with it, because there's so much up and down. As in life, change is the only constant, and that's also in investments. And so kind of goes hand in hand.
You know, sometimes it might seem like we talk a lot about mindset, but Rupali and I truly, absolutely feel into every word of what might sound generic to some people. And we do invite you to kind of really take these words in and practice them, even if they sound cliche.
Kalyani, why don't you tell everyone about the course that's coming up?
Sure. So I'm working on a course that's launching on 14th of November. It's going to be an investor starter pack, which kind of takes you from step zero, I would say not even step one, of from not knowing anything about the stock markets, what stocks are, what the stock market is, what you need to do when you enter, up to a level where you can check the charts yourself to make some sort of, to have your own opinion and have conviction about what you're investing in. And then start making investments. This is not for active traders. It's for investors. And to know that as well, you can log on. And to know that as well, you can enroll on the course to understand the difference. And investments in fundamentally good companies can never go wrong, or good ETFs can never go wrong. And that's what I want to take people through. It'll be at a nominal cost, and all the details will be on my Instagram at TradingMum. So yeah, a little bit of a plug in there.
That's exciting. I think the world needs more of that for sure, because we didn't have it when we needed it. So yes, it's going to be super exciting to see what that includes.
Yes.
Because what this will do is empower our listeners to take that first step in a very concrete way, break it down in a very structured kind of format. And that will also then empower you as our listener to then, you know, be able to have these conversations with people, or even if it's just your advisor, even if you choose not to invest yourself, it'll kind of, you'll have your tools.
Exactly. That's exactly what it's aimed at. Rupali, do you want to talk about your current portfolio? Just give us the high level details so we can invite listeners into a little bit more of our personal investment habits.
Yeah, sure. So I'm not an active trader. Mine is more long-term buy and hold strategy with stocks and ETFs. I know I have taken advantage of some dips in the past, and that's really helped me. And so that's what I do with stocks. Other than that, I've got gold, as I've said. I've got my real estate. I've dabbled passively in crypto in the past through people that do it. I've kind of just allocated an amount of money that's, you know, to do that. And I think that covers my investments on a high level.
Great. I love how you've kept it really simple. And I love that while you work in finance, you've got a simple portfolio that works for you. So to give a little bit of an insight into my journey, further from the dramatic story I shared previously, from CFDs, I went into equity. Like I said, I backtracked my steps into doing more simpler things, and equity, simple stock trading or equity. Equity means trading in simple stocks or ETFs. For me, when I say stocks or equity, it includes ETFs, and we'll go into details if you are not aware of this in our future episodes. Please leave some comments so we understand kind of what's easy and hard for you to understand as we go along as well.
Mm.
Back to my journey, I started trading in equity and it was a lot more intuitive. I started making money and it feels like it was all increments of 6 months. And now, sometimes when we think about 6 months, it feels like a really long time, but actually it goes really quick when you're absorbing a lot of new information. And also, anything new needs that amount of time to settle in and show us whether it's right for us and whether we're right for it as well. So basically, every 6 months, I felt that I was ready for a move, whether into another financial asset or changing my trading style based on what was and wasn't working for me. So from CFDs, like I said, I went into equity. And then from the beginning of this year, I think I kind of got to a point where a lot of my equity investment was tied into long-term investments, which I didn't want to touch. So it meant that the trading that I was previously able to do, let's say on an Apple, since there was a complete downturn in the market and I was long on these positions, I wasn't able to come in and out profitably. And I made the call to kind of just hold on to my investments. I buy when there are dips so that my average amount that I've bought these assets at comes down. Hopefully I'm making sense to everyone still. And I started leaning on options. So I'd never had any contact with options until the beginning of this year, and I invested in new learning then. And that's what I've been doing actively this year, apart from swing trading and long-term trading. And options has been a good way for me to generate more regular income, but I don't include that in Trading Mum as yet. In terms of crypto, as Rupali mentioned, I started trading in crypto in May 2021 through an advisor as well, someone that I had met through a trusted recommendation. And I have to say that I've had a few bad experiences in terms of a lot of like projects that were rug pull projects in inverted commas, where, you know, like we invested big amounts, bought nodes, what became quite popular earlier this year. The nodes were to give passive income, and you lose the amount when you put the funds in a node, and the node's gone now. And of course, so is the passive income. But this is kind of a risk that we were aware of and we chose to take it. I do crypto mostly along with my husband. So it's nice to kind of have another set of eyes looking at the investments. And that kind of goes to show our collective risk tolerance. And it doesn't bother me.
That's a lot. Wow. Yeah. So yeah, it's interesting how you're doing so much in the investment space. I'm actually having a little bit of FOMO when you mention options, but we'll get there.
Yeah. Even within options, there's different ways of playing options. Of course, there are timelines. So you can get in and out in a few minutes. You can get in and out in the matter of a day or months or years. But also some people play naked options. Some people cover themselves with spreads, etc. I've gone into a massive tangent here. But just to show that there is a vast universe, but we both started where you're probably at today, thinking of ourselves as outsiders not too long ago. In September 2020, when I took the first class, I remember being so... I'm familiar with charts from my experience in economics. But I was so boggled by, you know, when do I buy? When do I sell? What all am I checking for? Analysis paralysis amongst everything. So confused about how to use the platform. So I was truly there. I mean, I really understand your position right now.
I think what I take from our entire discussion now is we've both had such different kind of background and experience with investments and how our style is so different, active versus passive. And we've gone about it in such a different way also. And so what I would tell you as our listener is there's no right time. There's no wrong time. There's no right way or wrong way to do it. Obviously, there are things that are more risky and less risky so that you could kind of gauge. But the moral of the story is just invest. There's no like magic formula. There's no... You know, these bankers in their suits, you know, we're all pretending.
Yeah, really. I mean,
oh, we all know what we know and we all know what we don't know. Also, yes. There's a lot we don't know. So just invest.
Yes, the suits are a way to the
smokes
bankers.
And mirrors.
Suits are an armor to hide behind, I feel.
No, okay, I think in all honesty, I mean, there are people that are seriously good at what they do. But the point is that you're able to get there, you know, you're able to get to exactly where these people in the suits are. And so without having to go down the same path, it's actually simpler. Step one would be just, you know, Kalyani's course and then that's it. Then you'll know what to do next.
Yeah, I mean, we're laughing about it, but I've got our listeners exactly in mind in terms of creating the course. So I would love to have you guys check it out and be confident investors. And I think Rupali summarized it perfectly by saying to just invest, just start. That's it. There's no other way. There is no excuse to not do it. And that's it. One thing I would also want to add is people in the suits or people who work for the banks, they also have their very particular niches. Sometimes they only know about options. They don't even know what CFD means sometimes. This I'm talking from personal experience where they didn't understand what I was saying when I said I swing trade CFDs. And that sentence didn't make sense to someone who trades for a bank, which I thought was crazy. But now I've come to realize that he has his very particular niche. And that's fine. There's no shame in asking questions.
Yeah.
So if you take anything away from today, it would be to just invest. And we wish you the very best. Bye and see you in the next episode.
None of the information provided is financial advice. And Fantastic Females is not a financial advisor.
The information provided is educational only. It is general in nature and does not take into account your personal circumstances.
Please use your own due diligence before making any financial investment decisions and please seek a professional for your finance needs. So with that, we bring this episode of our financial adventure to an end. Please follow us on all social media platforms at Fantastic Females.
The details are in the show notes. Leave us a review to help with our growth and share this podcast with your loved ones to bring them along on this journey.